IFSRadio.com embraces the fourth dimension, promotes natural alternative health, spreads joy. Be the IFSRadio.com. Free energy, spirituality, honesty and truth. Be the IFSRadio.com. Increase the vibration of the people and the planet. BBSRadio.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to BBS Radio's The Higher Dimension. I'm Phyllis Pricer, your hostess for the evening, and I want to say welcome to the show. We have a wonderful and exciting guest this evening, a young lady. I have to say young, she's younger than me, but not a whole lot, but a young lady named Kathleen Marden, and she is the niece of Betty Hill. Betty and Barney Hill were abducted by a UFO and examined, and it was a very, very famous case from the 50s. I think it's one of the best, if not the best, documented cases of UFO abductions, and it's studied throughout the world as well as in the United States. And it's a very well-documented case with many witnesses, not only to the same UFO that was seen by other people that night, but to other UFO happenings that occurred as well. And welcome to the show, Betty.
Kathy, thank you very much.
I'm sorry, Kathy. I'm so excited. And let me tell you a little bit about Kathleen, if I may. Kathleen is a social worker and educator, and she graduated from the University of New Hampshire. She had graduate studies in education at the University of Cincinnati and UNH, and she has worked as an educator where she innovated, designed, and implemented model educational programs. She's done teaching of adult education classes on UFO and abduction history. And you were 13 years old in 1961. I thought this was in the 50s. I'm sorry, 1961.
Yeah.
When Betty Hill phoned your mother to let her know that she had encountered a flying saucer. Am I correct?
That's correct.
And I'd like you to go ahead and talk about what this true story of your aunt and Uncle Barney and the aftermath and so forth and so on, because they used hypnosis as one of the tools to try and obtain more accurate and detailed information.
That's
so go
correct.
Ahead and give us some of what you have discovered and what you want the people to know.
Okay. Well, my aunt and uncle were returning from a vacation to Niagara Falls in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
They were in Montreal on September 19, 1961,
mm-hmm.
and my uncle made the decision to drive home through the night rather than spending the night in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason for that was because a hurricane was coming up the coast, and he thought it would be best to get home before the hurricane struck and to take care
mm-hmm.
of the yard and
mm-hmm.
and whatever needed to be put away before the winds arrived. So they were driving through the White Mountains of New Hampshire
mm-hmm.
that night. It was a clear night. They were very high cirrus clouds, but they were the type of clouds that you don't really notice. You can see the stars
mm-hmm.
reflecting
mm-hmm.
through them.
Mm-hmm.
And Barney was driving along. I want to mention that he was an absolute skeptic, did not believe in UFOs. And as he was driving, watching the road, my Aunt Betty was watching the sky
mm-hmm.
Just because it was such a beautiful, bright night.
Well,
there was a moon that was about three-quarters full. It would be full in 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
And as she was watching, she noticed what appeared to be a falling star, only
mm-hmm.
it was falling upward. So she eliminated that possibility. And
uh-huh.
as she watched it, she then thought perhaps it was a satellite. my family was interested in satellites, and my brothers and I would go out to look for Sputnik with my grandfather.
Well, that's right. Sputnik was around in those days. I had forgotten that.
Yes. I lived right across the street from my grandfather, so I had developed a real enthusiasm for the space program. And as she watched it, it actually stopped. And she realized that it couldn't be a satellite at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it started to come closer and closer, drawing larger and larger in size.
Mm-hmm.
So south of Twin Mountain, New Hampshire, mm-hmm. which is just north of Franconia Notch, this is in the north mountainous country,
okay.
She convinced my uncle to stop so that she could get a better look at this approaching object. He did stop, and she took the binoculars first and watched it, and
mm-hmm.
it crossed in front of the moon flashing multicolored light.
Mm-hmm.
He then took binoculars and watched it, and at that point she had returned to the car, but as he looked at it,
mm-hmm.
Trying to explain it away as a Piper cub,
mm-hmm.
he realized that it was not. It was approaching very rapidly, reminding him of a commercial airliner coming in to land, but
mm-hmm.
it was completely silent.
Okay.
He returned to the car and drove through Franconia Notch, which is a very narrow kind of notch cut through the mountains on each side.
Okay.
And as he was driving along, Betty was observing this craft that seemed to be pacing right along with them, bouncing around the tops of the mountains, sometimes behind them, sometimes in front of them. And this was traveling in a stair-step pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It was traveling vertically, then leveling out horizontally, traveling vertically, then horizontally. And seemed to be spinning at the same time as it approached closer and closer.
Mm-hmm.
It was reflecting a blue-white light that seemed to blip off and on that gave her the idea that it was spinning. So
mm-hmm.
just south of the old man of the mountain, Barney decided to pull over so that he could get out of the car and take a look at this thing for himself.
Mm-hmm.
He and Betty were arguing because
about what it was?
He certainly didn't believe in flying saucers.
Uh-huh.
So he was telling her it was nonsense. It had to be a Piper cub or a military jet or something.
Mm-hmm. Explainable. Normal, natural, you know, that type of thing. Yeah.
That's right. But
and isn't that like a man?
Excuse me?
Isn't that like a man?
It certainly is, yes.
You're bad, so. You're batty. That's perfectly normal, you know?
Uh-huh.
Probably try to convince her that she's seeing things, yes.
Probably.
Go ahead.
But he knew in his own mind
right.
that what she was seeing was actually not a commercial airliner.
Right.
Because he knew it was completely silent,
mm-hmm.
and commercial airliners do not spin.
No, well, not only that, they're really not silent. I know. I've been to the airport any number of times, and I've yet to meet one that is courteous and quiet.
Absolutely. So he got out of the car, and he looked at this thing again,
mm-hmm.
and by that point, it had descended to within what he estimated to be about 1,000 feet of him,
mm.
and it was bouncing forward and becoming very large, and then retracting,
mm-hmm.
and
advancing
flying
and receding
in a very erratic way.
Yeah, okay. Did he get the impression that it was out of control in any sense, or that it was just doing this as a controlled movement?
As a controlled movement.
Okay.
It was definitely under control.
Okay.
It was just that the flight pattern was
mm-hmm.
such that it would ascend and descend
mm-hmm.
vertically and would bounce back and forth.
Hmm.
Sort of, I think, putting on a show for Ian and Betty.
Yeah, like, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, they returned to the car, and he continued driving south, and he was greatly relieved when he left Franconia Notch and entered the area called Lincoln, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
That is a tourist area.
Okay.
And there are cabins and motels, and there was...
People.
People.
Yeah.
Although it was the off-season.
Right.
And he decided at that point that if he could find a spot beside the road, he mm-hmm. would like to pull off and look at this thing again.
Okay.
So as he was looking for a spot, this craft rapidly shifted ahead
mm-hmm.
and stopped just in front of his car, hovering approximately 80 to 100 feet above the vehicle.
That would be about treetop level, you would think?
Yes, or 8 to 10 stories up. That
okay.
was another description that he gave.
Okay.
So at that point, it has stopped spinning.
Uh-huh.
He and Betty looked at the windshield, through the windshield at
mm-hmm.
it. They could see a double row of rectangular windows.
Right.
And they could see a red light starting to telescope out of each end of it. It previously appeared to be cigar-shaped, but at that point, they were able to tell that it was actually disc-shaped due to its
okay.
proximity.
Okay.
Now, Barney got out of the car to get a better look at it through the binoculars, and as he did, it shifted to the adjacent field. This would have been just to the east,
mm-hmm.
on the left of where he was standing.
Okay.
He walked toward it,
mm-hmm.
carrying the binoculars, and as he looked up at it, he could see beings, 8 to 11 beings, standing behind this double row of windows.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one that seemed to be concentrating on him.
Okay.
As the lights continued to telescope out of each side,
mm-hmm.
the craft tilted toward him. Now, these beings, all except for one, had gone to a control panel and seemed to be working with something on this control panel.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when it tilted toward him. And something seemed to be descending out of the bottom of this craft. And he was never really sure exactly what that was.
Okay.
But something was coming down out of the bottom.
Okay.
Now, the being who was concentrating on him frightened him terribly because he had an appearance that was different from
mm-hmm.
anything he had seen before.
Okay.
He knew, although he could not remember the exact features at that point, he seemed to have a mental block,
mm-hmm.
maybe due to fear.
Right.
But it could have been due to the fact that this creature seemed to be taking control of Barney.
Right. And that would be an issue that would really, is not acceptable for many people, you know, men or women. But, yeah, and that could be a very, very terrifying thing to revisit.
Absolutely not. And Barney had taken a pistol with him
uh-huh.
for protection in case they needed to sleep beside the road.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the pistol in his pocket.
Uh-huh.
And it was terribly frightening because he was being forced to keep the binoculars up to his eyes,
mm-hmm.
and he wasn't able to go for that pistol that he felt he needed to protect himself and Betty at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So he had lost control of his ability to take self-initiated action.
Mm-hmm.
And this frightened him greatly as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the movements of the beings on board the craft and that frightening being who was looking at him caused him to fear them greatly. Because
okay.
he felt they had a plan of action in mind.
Right.
And finally, he was able to break away,
mm-hmm.
running and screaming back to the car to Betty that they were going to be captured.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow he felt that he had received this kind of communication. And he rapidly jumped into the car, put it into first gear as the craft shifted from the field to above his vehicle again. Mm-hmm. And as he sped down the road, Betty opened the window and looked up. And she was attempting to locate the craft, but all she saw is blackness. She no longer saw the stars, and she later realized that what she had been looking at was the bottom of the craft.
Okay.
Because within 5 or 6 blocks, they estimated, there was a beeping sound that seemed to be emitting from the craft onto
mm-hmm.
the trunk of the car, as if it were bouncing off the trunk of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to be buzzing or beeping in a rhythmic pattern that reminded Betty of the Morse code.
Mm-hmm.
As they drove along, short and long beeps then. Pardon me?
A short and long beeps in a rhythmic pattern.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
As they drove along, the beeping stopped. But I should say that the beeping did cause the car to vibrate. And Betty started to feel of the car to see if she would get an electric shock, which she did not.
Hmm. Okay. She was a pretty brave woman.
She was. She was very brave.
I'm not sure I were being pursued.
Did you know she was a social worker for the state of New Hampshire, a child welfare worker, and she was also very actively involved in the civil rights movement?
Well, I would guess that if you've been a social worker and you're looking to protect children, that puts you up there in having, I don't want to use the word moxie, but you have to have courage to do that kind of work because of the people that you encounter, which... it's just part of the nature of the beast in that kind of environment that you must move forward and take initiative and to protect.
That's correct. And
so,
I should mention as well that my uncle was of African-American descent.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1961,
that was pretty
it was
radical.
Very brave of
both
Betty
of them,
and
frankly.
To be
yes.
married at all. It was illegal in a lot of states.
Exactly. So that's, I think, what a lot of people don't really realize is that it was what would be termed a mixed-race marriage, and I think that's what some people tried to use as perhaps not being so legitimate, what they saw.
Well, I think that those people are probably racist.
Well, that's true, too. But anything that would be different or unusual would be trotted out in order to cast doubt. I don't care what it is that the people do. And yes, was definitely racism, no
sure.
question about it. But I think that's absolutely fabulous. And part of what I like is that they were then, you say, taken aboard, and they have memories of that came back, slowly over a period of time, yes?
Yes. Actually, they thought that they had lost the craft.
Mm-hmm.
And Betty continued to observe some of the landmarks along
uh-huh.
the road and remembered a turn. Both of them remembered encountering a roadblock at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them remembered a fiery red-orange ball in
uh-huh.
the road. And both of them remembered that approximately 35 miles south of the field, they heard another series of those beeping or buzzing sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And Barney turned to Betty and said, "Oh, no, not again." Betty said, "Now do you believe in flying saucers?" And Barney said, "Don't be ridiculous. There's no such thing."
True to his belief system to the end.
Absolutely. Well, when they arrived home, they realized that things were not quite in order.
Yes.
The tops of Barney's best dress shoes were scraped.
Uh-huh.
And ruined.
Uh-huh.
Their watches were permanently broken, and
mm-hmm.
they'd worked fine the night before. Betty's dress was torn.
Right.
The top of the zipper was torn in 2 places, 1 inch on one side, 2 inches on the other. The hem was torn down in one area, and the lining was torn from waist to hemline, with no explanation for how this had happened to her new dress.
Mm.
Additionally, there were a series of 12 to 18 very shiny, highly polished circles on the trunk of the car. They were about the size of silver dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And when Betty placed a compass over the top of them, the compass needle would spin and spin. Now, a hobnail needle might react to metal, and it would certainly spin a little bit or fluctuate when it's put up by the battery.
Right.
But not on the trunk of the car.
Yeah,
and
that's an anomaly that was very strange.
Experimented. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, yeah, that's very, very strange.
Yeah.
Because that's not a normal situation. A lot of, I'm not sure what our audience knows much about this, and so I wanted to try and get a little bit more of some information as far as had they, prior to, and we can go back to the narration, but prior to this, you said Betty had believed in UFOs, okay? And that's because of her interest and engendered by her father in space and so forth. Is that correct?
I can't say that she was not a UFO enthusiast. She hadn't read anything about UFOs.
Okay.
But she thought that there might be a possibility that UFOs were real.
Okay.
The only reason I know that is because in 1957, when my mother was going grocery shopping at night, she saw a craft above a field in South Kingston, New Hampshire.
And now, this is your mother, right?
This is my mother, Betty's younger sister.
Okay.
And this craft was hovering. It looked like a mothership. It was large, cigar-shaped, and smaller craft were flying around it and flew into it. My mother ran to a nearby house, and the occupants of that house went out and observed this with my mother.
Okay.
So Betty believed that my mother was not making this up. Betty believed that my mother might have seen a UFO. Bonnie thought it was sheer nonsense.
Okay, so what I'm getting is, somehow there was some kind of prior showing or in contact, even if you want to say that, or awareness of UFOs in that area prior to this really overt act, I would call it. And so your family had some kind of a predisposition to say, you know, what I see I can believe in type of thing. That's very, very interesting, and I wonder how much that would be a part of, or do you think that would have anything to do with this later contact that would come down the road with Barney and your aunt?
Well,
in other words, like a softening up, so to speak, you know?
I don't think so.
Okay.
The family has always looked upon both of those incidents as chance encounters.
Okay.
Just opportunistic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there was no feeling that Barney and Betty had been observed prior to this.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Because sometimes people feel that, you see.
Yes.
You've delved so much into this field, and now that you've retired from school teaching, you've put an awful lot of effort and research into this, not only this particular incident, and you are, in effect, defending your aunt's good name and her credibility in this, and Barney's as well, but also you've looked into other things, to other areas or other I don't want to say stories, that's not right, incidents, let me put it that way. I want to use the right word and sound appropriate on this one. Other incidents that would indicate that this can happen to almost anyone. Some people seem, at least have expressed to me personally, that they have felt that they were particularly targeted at some point. But this is nothing that seemed to be a part of the incident. It was just sort of they happened to be out on a night and it was in the right place at the wrong time or vice versa.
Right.
Okay.
That's the way that Betty and Barney always looked at it.
Okay. Just wanted to let that know, because so many people have a different view of this. If anyone wants to call in, you do have the phone number to call into BBS Radio and ask questions about this incident and others with Ms.
Martin,
Kathleen. The number is 1-877-876-5227, And I didn't want to really interrupt the flow, but I think sometimes it's kind of nice to recap and recoup because I don't know what people do know and what they are aware of. And for me, it's very interesting and challenging and different. So I wanted to give the opportunity to others and try to ask some questions and get some ideas about what it was really like. I also understand that this is an incident that really affected the rest of their lives.
It certainly did. And I want to express to your listeners that everything that I have stated so far was consciously remembered by Betty and Barney when they arrived home. None of this was retrieved for the first time through hypnosis.
Okay.
This was all clear, conscious memory.
Excellent.
It is only the abduction scenario that was retrieved for the first time through hypnosis.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that was probably due to what? The trauma they went through, or they were told not to recall this, or it was...
They were told not to recall this. I used to think at the outset of this investigation 17 years ago, I thought that it was probably the trauma. But as I've learned more and more, I think that some type of mind control was used, you know, probably highly technological stuff. But I think that that is what was used on Betty and Barney. I don't think that it was traumatic amnesia.
Okay. I was going to guess that they used some form of what we use, which is hypnosis.
Well, that's also suggested as a possibility.
Because if we know about hypnosis, why wouldn't others?
That's correct.
Okay. Go ahead with your narration now. As I said, I just wanted to try and bring a little bit more of a, you know, an explanation into it and, you know, give some
And feel free feelings. To stop me and ask questions at any point, please.
Okay. Well, continue on, please. This is fascinating.
Okay. So what we found out was that starting in 1964, January, for a period of 6 months, Betty and Barney drove every Saturday from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, down to Boston to see this renowned psychiatrist, Dr. Benjamin Simon. And he had a great deal of success in working with shell shock victims of World War II. He would be the perfect person for them to see. And they were hypnotized separately by him. He imposed amnesia upon them, so they couldn't even remember what they said until near the end of these sessions.
Okay. And these sessions went along for how long?
They started, well, the conditioning started in January. The first hypnosis regression was on February 22nd, and the last session was on June 26th.
Huh. That was a long time.
It went on for a very long time at great expense to Betty and Barney, and they wanted all of this information to remain confidential. So anyway, what they said in the end under hypnosis, and their stories were so identical, except for, of course, when they were in separate rooms, one didn't know what the other was doing.
Right.
But they apparently had driven off from U.S. Highway Route 3 across a bridge, and Betty had always remembered crossing the bridge, and Barney did later on. Onto highway, it's a state highway, Route 175 South. It parallels Route 3. And off from Route 175, they made another left-hand turn onto a tiny gravel road that in those days would have been used for logging. It was a dead-end road. And as they were driving up that road, they encountered a roadblock. First they saw this fiery ball, then they encountered a roadblock, and there were 6 to 8 men standing in the road. when they approached the Hills car, which at that point had stopped, and then the engine died, mm-hmm. Betty and Barney became extremely frightened.
Okay.
Betty held on to the handle. She was going to try to run into the woods and escape.
Mm-hmm.
And Barney opened the door and put his foot on the ground. He had his gun.
Okay.
At that point, they were removed from the car, each by two people, or I should say beings. They were not human beings.
Right, right.
And something, Betty recalled later that something had been pointed at her, some type of device. And when it was pointed at her, she seemed to have lost consciousness at that point. Barney also had lost his ability to do anything. And he was being actually dragged or somehow moved. He never knew if he was actually being physically dragged or if there was some type of device being used to move him along
mm-hmm.
down this path in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
But they were being escorted through a path to this UFO, which was about 80 feet in diameter, and it was sitting on the ground, and it was dark. And they were taken up a ramp. At that point, Betty fought these beings and tried to prevent them from taking her on board. Barney was completely under their control and did not fight. This is probably how Betty's dress was torn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she was taken, Barney was taken ahead of her up the
mm-hmm.
ramp. They kept him in the hallway while they waited for Betty to be taken up. She was taken to one room, Barney was taken to another room, and both endured physical examinations, very bizarre physical examinations at the
mm-hmm.
hands of these beings.
Mm-hmm. Would it be the kind of examination that we would be called a stringent physical that might be conducted A to Z, as we would call it? In other words, like you would have a colonoscopy and all of that kind of thing?
No.
No, it would
no,
not.
I can't say that.
Okay.
I can say... tell you that they were particularly interested in Betty's and Barney's skeletal systems, it seemed.
Their skeletal systems.
They examined their joints, their feet, their hands, that structure. They were also very interested in Betty's skin. I don't know what they were looking at. Betty thought that they were attempting to determine the difference between her skin or her cell structure
mm-hmm.
and the alien being's cell structure.
Interesting.
So Dr. Simon, of course, being a psychiatrist, pushed this with Betty to see if they were trying to see the difference between her skin and Barney's skin,
right.
thinking that it was perhaps all a fantasy and that this material was coming from some kind of anxiety that she might have about the difference between her skin and Barney's.
Right. Interesting.
Yes. They also took samples from nearly every orifice in their bodies.
Mm-hmm. That's why I asked about, like, a physical exam that you might have. Like, you know, you get nose swabs and ear swabs and
yes,
so forth and so
sort
on.
Yes, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and
okay.
And samples were taken.
Okay.
Their skin, there was a light scraping on their skin.
Okay.
Hair samples were taken. I'm not sure if I mentioned that.
No, you hadn't.
And,
it was a pretty darn close physical, wasn't it?
It was.
Okay.
And then they rolled Barney over, and it seemed like they were counting his vertebrae, pushing down his spine for some reason. Now, Betty said that they were also pushing on her spine,
right.
but they were touching her spine with needles. She compared
yeah.
this to having a nerve conduction test, for example.
I see. I was going to inject her humorously how the Bible says that God made man, you know, women from Adam's rib. And so for a long time, the church, and theory was that men had one less rib than women. I wonder if they read that version of the Bible.
Uh-huh.
They were checking out whether or not that had happened. The book that you wrote, and let's talk a little bit about the book, because time is fleeting, and you spent an awful lot of time doing research and compilation on this, and the book is available to buy in case our listeners are interested in having a full-scale review of this. I read the book, and I have to tell you all that I was very impressed with the book. It's very well written. It's very detailed. It answers many questions that I myself would bring up if somebody were to tell me that they were abducted, because it answers a great deal. It's very detailed. It's professionally done. It's not sensationalized. It's a factual account. It's almost the way you would write a travelogue.
Yes, the book is captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience by Stanton T. Friedman and myself. Your guests are probably familiar with him. He is the best-known scientific ufologist in North America and possibly the world, and he's also a nuclear physicist. Very highly respected in the field, and known for his meticulous attention to detail. And I believe that I'm also very meticulous in what I do.
Well,
I studied this case for 15 years before I really sat down and wrote this book. I had certainly written some of it, but it was extremely important to me to review all of Betty's files, to transcribe all of those hypnosis tapes for comparative analysis, and to compare them to some dreams that she had shortly after that UFO sighting, to make sure that this was not what she said under hypnosis, was not a fantasy experience that Barney absorbed from her. They were not fantasy prone. I have personality profiles in the book. That demonstrates that they were not fantasy-prone individuals. But I wanted to know for myself, did this event really occur the way they said it did, or did it not occur? It would have been a lot easier for me and for my family, I think, to think that maybe it was a fantasy and that my aunt and uncle really had not been abducted. But as you'll see in the book, I go into great detail, meticulous detail, in tearing apart what Betty said and what Barney said, sentence by sentence in their descriptions, to look for flaws, to look for inconsistencies.
Well, I found it a very well-written book. I read it almost straight through in just a couple of days. That's when I get... when something grabs my attention, I have a tendency to chew through to the very end. And as I said, I found it a very, very compelling book and well written.
Well, thank you so much.
And I enjoyed it at the same time. And I just wanted the listeners to be aware of this, and that it is available to purchase, and that it is well written, and it answers a great many questions. It also makes you wonder why there was this particular incident at this time, and I don't know if I had mentioned to you, but along about this time, a little earlier, there had been quite a number of UFOs seen over Washington, D.C.
Yes, there were.
Yes.
In 1952, to be exact.
Yes, and I remember that, because I remember being looking up and seeing them, and my parents...
You did see them then?
Yes. Oh, yes. I saw them.
Yes, this happened twice in July of 1952.
Right. I remember there were fireflies out because my mom, pointed them out, and then they had the big headlines in the newspaper the next day, and then there was this grand rush to cover up that such a thing could not be, because it was appalling to think that something from outer space could come in, and all our wonderful defenses for the White House seemed to be so much dream material because they couldn't protect even the President of the United States for such a thing.
Right. Now, did you realize that a flight inspector and commercial airline pilots actually saw these things?
They were probably in the headlines, but I would have been a little too young to know that.
And it was also they were also sighted on radar. And
yes,
Air Force jets were scrambled to try to intercept them.
Exactly. That was the big deal, because then I remember there were jets flying over. And in those days, having jets fly over D.C. was not was a rather big deal. You just didn't have the flights going over that you do nowadays.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've seen them before over in Arizona, as I mentioned, back in, what was it, 90-something? We had talked about this earlier, 90-something,
yeah.
I saw them. So, you know, I'd personally seen UFOs, the UFO, at least one, over Washington, D.C. once. And
can you tell me, what did it look like? Tell me what you
saw. It was saucer-shaped, and I will tell you, when it came down, I realized that what caught my eye was the movement when I saw trees ahead of me, in front of me, going through the middle of D.C. on Rock Creek Park. The center, all the tops of trees kind of bowed down and out, just like if you were to blow into a glass of water, how there would be a slight depression where your breath hit the water, and then it fans out in a circle.
Uh-huh.
So everything was like in a circle, and I looked up and I saw these trees, and I darn near drove into the Jersey Wall, and was wondering what the Sand Hill had happened, and wondering why nobody else was seeing what I was seeing. And there was a mental conversation, but that, this is the show for you and your story, so I don't want to go into that here. I would rather explore with you what you did, because, and also, if other people who are listening have had UFO experiences, and they'd like to bring in some information on that, I would like them now to call in and share with us if you've ever seen a UFO, and if so, you know, how personal and when it was.
And if they would like to make a formal report, they can go online to www.mufon.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's MUFON.com.
Okay.
And that's the Mutual UFO Network.
Uh-huh.
They can learn more about UFOs at that site, and they can also make a report if they'd like to report a sighting they had.
I didn't realize that. I had been to a MUFON meeting in Florida years ago, but I wasn't, and I met some people, a few of them were a little scatty, a little different.
Well,
and,
you know, you find that on the fringes of some of this, but then you also find very serious scientists as
Okay, that's good, because I was a little concerned. I tend to be very practical, being a Capricorn. And if I see something, I know I see it. I don't make it up, and I don't hallucinate, and I don't, you know, and I know the difference between a dream and reality. But at any rate, what's very, very fascinating is that so many people see them, and then they try to deny it. I think that's not only Barney's situation, but I think even today, a lot of people who have seen a UFO, sort of like a dog with a bone, they try to dig a hole and bury it. And it doesn't work, because your memories will come back, especially if there was any kind of contact. It's not something that you can really hide very well,
mm-hmm.
but or forget about. So at any rate, please continue on with your story, because I find it so fascinating and interesting.
Well, in the book I've written
mm-hmm.
about, it was basically Betty's life. I started out actually thinking that I was going to write her biography,
uh-huh.
but as she turned more and more of her files over to me and did more and more interviews, as I contacted some of the original investigators
mm-hmm.
and was able to acquire a lot of material from them, letters that Betty had written to them way back
mm-hmm.
From the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And to have their investigation reports and to see how much scientific involvement there was. The book really turned more into a UFO case study.
Yes.
I was so curious about being able to confirm everything that I said. I did not want to stretch the truth at all or sensationalize this in any way. So I really took a very hard, even-keeled approach at this.
Okay. The one other thing I wanted to point out is that what I believe you said you found was consistency.
Find consistency in Betty's and Bonnie's stories. Yeah,
right.
When of their abduction, and these were minute details that were not in Betty's dreams, and it would have been impossible for Betty and Bonnie to have communicated those details to each other. Let me give you just one example,
please.
And there are several in the book. But when in Betty's dreams, she and Bonnie were released from the UFO at the same time. They were escorted to the car by all of the crew, and they stood by the side of the car and watched the UFO leave. Well, in Betty's and Bonnie's separate hypnosis sessions, each stated that Bonnie was taken to the car before Betty. Betty remained behind at the craft arguing with the leader because the book that she had taken that she thought was going to be her proof that this had actually happened was removed. It was taken from her, and she was told she couldn't have it, that it would be best that she would forget about the entire experience. So she remained behind. Bonnie went to the car, opened the passenger door, and sat on the seat on his gun. Betty finally was escorted to the car, came walking out at the end of the path by herself, opened the passenger door, and her dog, Delcy, was on the seat. Now, in Betty's dream, Delcy was underneath the seat, shivering and shaking. Well, when Bonnie entered the car, he had actually felt down under the seat, and that's where Delcy was. So this is the same as what was in Betty's dream for Bonnie, but it was not for Betty, because Delcy was then on the seat. Now, then...
We didn't mention in this that when she was getting ready to leave the UFO, she had asked the whatever the being that had examined her or befriended her, she'd asked him for something she could take with her to prove this had happened. You didn't go into that.
Yes, that's what I was talking about when I mention that book. This was a book. It appeared to be made of a thin plastic type of material. It was very hard. She saw it laying on the counter. The leader was in the room with her at the time. The examiner had left the room to examine Bonnie. And she opened this book, and she was looking through these thin, hard plastic type of pages, and there were symbols on the pages that were seemed to be embedded into this material, and they were written vertically rather than horizontally, and there were six rows of them. And in the book, if you go to the index of the book, in the year 2000, I convinced her to attempt to draw what she saw in that book. And it's actually on page 289 of the book. She couldn't remember exactly what she saw, but it was very kind of her just to try to remember what those lines looked like.
And wasn't there also a star map she was shown?
Yeah.
Where they were from? I mean, she actually had the presence of mind to have a rather intelligent conversation with the people, or at least one person on the ship.
Yes, when they didn't hurt her, well, they did hurt her, but when this one took her pain away, she began to trust him. So when she was left alone in the room with him, they had a conversation. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a part that is difficult to know if it was actually part of her dream mm-hmm. or if it occurred, because only she said this, and it was impossible to double-check on that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But she did observe a star map. She asked where they were from. This was in her dream, and
mm-hmm.
it was also in her hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
When she asked that question, he went to the wall. He did something with the
mm-hmm.
wall, and this map appeared. It was made out of a very thin material, she said. In her dream, it was actually like a window shade that was pulled down, like you would see back in 1961 in
right,
any the classroom.
The maps that the kids had in the walls in the classroom. Right, gotcha.
And she even spoke about that somewhat under hypnosis, but after the hypnosis, she realized that it was actually three-dimensional, that it appeared to be just like she was looking out into space, she said, almost like looking through a window, but she didn't think it was a window. It was probably a hologram.
Okay.
There were glowing objects on this map that probably represented stars.
Okay.
Some were as large as a nickel. Some were smaller, and some were just the size of a pinhead. And there were lines connecting them. Some of them, the leader explained to her, were trade routes of stars that they traveled to frequently.
Uh-huh.
And others were just dotted lines or dashed lines, and they were said to be expeditions.
Expeditions.
Yes. And actually, a very intelligent woman from Ohio, Marjorie Fish, who
mm-hmm.
was a school teacher and also a member of Mensa, which means that she had a genius IQ, started to build models in an attempt to find out whether or not this map could possibly exist anywhere except for in Betty's imagination or
uh-huh.
in her dreams. And in 1972, she actually did find all of the stars that would complete this pattern.
Hmm.
Now, my co-author, Stanton Friedman, was one of the scientists who reviewed Marjorie's work,
mm-hmm.
as well as J. Allen Hynek.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I believe, David Saunders, who was on the Condon Committee,
mm-hmm.
also reviewed Marjorie's work. It was also reviewed at Ohio State University in a computer lab,
mm-hmm.
and it was found that Marjorie's work was accurate.
Okay.
And so she was able to identify stars that she believed, according to all of these years of calculations and model building. And it was just incredibly detailed, and she had so much determination to continue to do all of this.
Wow.
Particularly when, for years, she was not able to find an exact match.
Mm-hmm. So this is, all of this research and all of this writing has really been an undertaking by more than one or two people, and the information has come from different people who approached it from a detached objective rather than subjective viewpoint, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the amazing thing about all of these stars is that they're in our own galaxy.
Okay.
They are in our own neighborhood in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
They are all in what Stanton Friedman referred to as, if you think of a pizza, a very thin
right.
pizza, a wheel,
yes.
they would all be located like pepperoni on that pizza. So they were not like raisins in a loaf of bread where
right.
you have to travel, you know,
randomly
hundreds of light years
yes.
away and then back. They
right.
were all within what could possibly be traveling distance for a very technologically advanced civilization.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Okay, well, let's go back then, because we're coming down to the wire. I just love learning about all of this, you know, because to me it's so fascinating to go through this. But In wrapping up, what and you know, in case some people do want to call in, what would you say is the most important thing that you have found with regard to your research and your study regarding this UFO sighting and your aunt and her place in history with this?
My goodness, that's a big question.
Less. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot quite that badly.
I can say that I was absolutely fascinated by my comparative analysis of the hypnosis tapes vis-a-vis Betty's dream material.
Uh-huh.
That was the one piece of evidence that I was so skeptical about initially.
Mm.
And when I really took a look at that, then I realized that I could no longer be a skeptic about that.
Okay.
I think that perhaps part of what Betty said in the hypnosis might have been actually dream material, but there was so much more that wasn't.
Exactly.
And that Betty's and Barney's statements correlated perfectly. And so that convinced me that this abduction was real. Perhaps not exactly in the way that Betty remembered it, but it was real as far as I can tell.
Okay.
I was fascinated by the amount of research done by PhD level scientists who were interested in this.
Okay.
And I just think that it was extremely well researched. I was also fascinated to read more about psychophysics experiments that Betty did with a team of engineers and a writer and researchers, very objective researchers.
Mm-hmm.
Over a period of years, and these were contact experiments, to see if Betty could actually communicate.
That's right. So other experiments were done. Now, very quickly, we can say that you had observed UFOs after this yourself. The family as a whole and friends also did, and she did, but there was never any other upfront and personal abduction contact again for either of them. Is that correct?
Yes, both Betty and Barney stated, because Barney died in 1969,
right.
But Betty insisted that she had never again been abducted.
Okay.
So if she was, she certainly didn't remember it.
I think that's absolutely fascinating. Again, I'd like to tell our listeners, because we are coming down to the wire, that we have been talking to Kathleen Marden, and the book is Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. It can be purchased. Is there a contact number that you'd like to leave that people can reach you, or where they can get the book or anything like that, my dear?
Yes, people can purchase the book from me by sending a check or money order to Kathleen Marden, P.O. Box 93, East Kingston, New Hampshire, 03827.
Mm-hmm.
That would be in the amount of $18.99.
Mm-hmm.
And that covers shipping and handling. It would be sent priority mail.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be autographed both by Stanton Friedman and myself.
Uh-huh.
You can also go to Stanton Friedman's website, which is stantonfriedman.com. And if you would like to purchase the book, using PayPal, so you could buy it with a credit card that way. It's also in bookstores, in Barnes and Noble. You could get it through any bookstore, and also online at Amazon.com. So you have a number of different places where you could get the book.
That's wonderful. I am so glad that I was able to talk to you, and I was delighted to read the book and to learn more about this. I guess we do have a few more moments. And if there's anything else that you'd like to just bring to our attention that you think is important, please feel free to do so. I am so glad to have had you on board. It's a fascinating subject, I think, and one in which I have an interest. don't talk about it much because that's not an ordinary everyday dinner conversation. But I am so glad that you took the time to share and that you actually put all the time and effort you did into writing that book, because I think it clarifies a great deal.
Thank you. It was a very long personal journey, but I really wanted to get to the truth.
And I think you have.
Yes, I believe I have, and objectively, too.
This is very, very important, I think. And, all right, just, you know, whatever else you feel that would be of interest to us along the, with what you have observed and found out about... Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you again, Kathleen. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
God bless you all, and thank you for listening to The Higher Dimension. You can reach me at bbsradio.com, or you can call at area code 202-387-2080. Goodbye. God bless, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you again. God bless you, Kathleen.
Oh, thanks.
Hello, everybody. This is Damian Brinkley. Welcome to the hearts and minds of Enfoldment. This is News for the Soul.